Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. We are close to a quorum, so we should get started. We'll start with Senator Prettner Solin's bill, as she's not a committee member, and it should be very quick. And if we don't quite have a quorum, Senator Prettner Solin, I think we can just set it aside until we do and then adopt the amendment and get your bill on its way.
Okay, thank
you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 3605, and this is a bill that, because of all the energy policy that we did last year and the need for us to have a better watch and oversight on energy of all sorts, what we've done is to take the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force and expand its duties so it now covers all energy, not just electric energy. And the reason that I'm bringing it to this committee, I believe, are for the appropriations section, subdivision 6 on page 4 at the bottom of the page, 4.32, and also on page 6, sections 2 at the bottom of the page, the authorization. And basically what this says is that the Energy Commission has the same authority to appropriate funds, and that the funds that are currently in the Electric Energy Task Force may also be used for the Energy Commission when it is created. So basically, it's a neutral fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Prettner Solin. And we can have the fiscal analyst, Mr. Mueller, just talk briefly about that. But essentially, it's an assessment, and that's we just track those in the finance division. And so that's why the bill is here. Do you want to say anything about the fiscal note, Mr. Mueller?
Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note should be handed out on this. And right now, the fiscal note is showing a $250,000 expenditure under the miscellaneous special revenue fund. And this would be, there would be an assessment under that Commerce has done for the existing legislative electrical energy task force. And that assessment would continue, and there'd be ongoing assessment authority for this new task force. So the fiscal notes kind of assumes the maximum that could be spent. I think they're assuming there would be additional assessments of up to $250,000. Actually, if you look on page 5 of the fiscal note, the finance is estimating that given the history, the Legislative Energy Commission's cost would be about $92,000 each year. And again, that would be assessed through the utilities by Commerce.
Senator Prettner Solin, it'd be nice if I agree with you completely that this commission needs to expand beyond electricity. It'd be nice if it wasn't just the electric utilities that paid for it, but that's kind of the system we have in place, and there's no easy way to do it. So yeah, is that why we're keeping it?
Madam Chair, this bill differs from the other body, and I think there'd be a big chance to change some of this in a conference committee.
Okay. All right. We're also.
I know, Madam Chair, that you would like an amendment made. So there is a policy item that I have an amendment drafted, the A2 amendment.
And thank you, Madam Senator Prettner Solin.
This
go ahead.
Has to do with some responsibilities of the Electric Energy Task Force, which is being deleted in this other energy task force being put in place. So this puts some language into the bill that would continue some of the same responsibilities or oversight that the Electric Energy Task Force had in the past. This has been language that has been negotiated and worked out by all parties.
Senator Prettner Solin, thank you very much. I appreciate that the amendment does take care of the policy controversy on the bill, and so we don't have to get into any kind of a heated debate about that. And I appreciate that everybody has come to the table and found a resolution to the issues relating to Manitoba Hydro. So this would move us forward. Senator Chaudhry?
I'll move it.
Senator Chaudhry moves the A2 amendment. We're still one member short. So We need one more member, unfortunately. So I think what we'll do is just lay this aside, and Senator Prentner-Solon, you can stay or leave, whichever you want, but I think we'll just adopt the amendment and pass the bill out to the floor, would be my intention with the to the finance. Sorry, I always forget about Senator Cohen. We're just a little part of his committee, and I can't forget that, to the finance division. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Prentner-Solon, I didn't see in this bill where the commission would employ staff. What do you do for staffing the commission, or did I miss something in the bill?
We currently, Madam Chair,
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Fredrickson, we currently utilize the staff of the legislative, what's it called?
Coordinating Commission.
LCC.
Coordinating Commission, yeah, committee.
I think, Senator Fredrickson, over time, I mean, this has been around since 1994 in the Prairie Island legislation, as you know, and there have been times when the Electric Energy Task Force did hire consultants. I don't know if they ever had staff. I can't remember if there was actual staff. Senator Prentner-Solon.
Madam Chair, we often use our committee staff, but also for support. But that's true. Part of the appropriations is for the purpose of hiring the consultants to do the bulk of the work.
Senator Fredrickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I can think of several committees that have hired staff in the past. Certainly the LCCMR does, but that's a little different organization. The old Waste Management Commission hired full-time staff, as did the Water Commission. So that's why I was raising the question if this commission should have full-time staff to help with their duties.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Fredrickson. As I said, the bill and the other body looks very different and does include some of those provisions. So there will be a great opportunity to have further discussion about that.
Okay. All right. The record should reflect we do have a quorum present on Senator Senator Chaudhry's motion. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say no. The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 3605 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee.
On that motion, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Fredrickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
All right. Senator Bickerman's still not here, so he's a committee member anyway. So we'll go ahead with Senator Chaudhry and start the policy bill. Did you put that notice on this morning? Okay. I just want to announce to the public, we've had a lot of discussion about this policy bill with I've talked with a number of committee members about it, and I apologize for those I haven't had a chance to talk with. Because this is a policy bill and we're a finance committee, we could easily spend hours and hours recreating the debates that were held in the policy committee. And I just don't think that's appropriate. I don't think that's what we should be doing as a finance chair. And honestly, we don't have time anyway. So I'm just going to make a blanket rule that on bills that are in this that have been heard in the policy committee, we will not be taking testimony today. So with that, we'll start with you, Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your opening remarks. We have policy committees for a reason. We have finance committees for a reason, and the purpose of a policy committee is to discuss the policy. Our policy committee has done that. We've spent all session hearing bills. We've had some long hearings. I think everything in our bill has been thoroughly discussed and adequate testimony and all the in an open and fair and thorough way. And so what I've asked staff to do is go through the finance portions of the bill, and then we have an amendment that adjusts all the finance portions so that there's no fiscal note to the bill. And I think that's the main purpose of being here is to review the finance portions, and a policy bill probably should not have a fiscal impact. And if so, if it does, there should be some way of taking care of it. So we have an amendment that deals with the fiscal issues, either removing them or dealing with them in a way that has no impact.
Okay, we'll have that amendment passed out, Senator Chaudhry. And members, this is what's in this bill. We attempted in last week's finance bill or the week before to deal with all the general fund items. There's a few things that could have potentially had a general fund impact, but as you said, we'll take care of that now before the bill leaves this committee. There's also obviously some special fund game and fish impact on this bill, but that's we'll reconcile that today as well before the bill leaves the division. So we're now passing out the A-10 amendment. Senator Chaudhry, would you like to go through this, or do you want to have
staff
go through it?
We'll have Mr. Mueller go through it.
Sure.
Or Mr. Knopf, either.
Okay. So let's first, Mr. Mueller will go through this spreadsheet that he's passed out. We all have this, correct?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I'll kind of work off a one page, just sort of a quick fiscal summary of some of the fiscal items in the bill. It's actually a condensed version of a 25-page fiscal note, which I brought a few copies of that, if other members would be more interested in reading the 25-pager. But and this address, this, like I said, summarizes the fiscal items in the bill. And when I'm done going through this, maybe Mr. Knopf can go through it's actually the A-10 amendment. In the notes section, it makes reference to an A-8 amendment that will deal with the cost, but it's actually an A-10 amendment. We've since modified that. So the items in the bill that, I don't know, should we go through each item now or maybe as the amendment, Madam Chair?
Whatever you think is most logical.
Why don't we just go through the amendment?
Okay, and then maybe after the amendment, we'll see what other remaining fiscal
Sounds
items
good.
Remain. Okay.
All right, and who's going to go through the amendment? Mr. Knopf? Okay.
Madam Chair and members, I can go through the A-10 amendment with you. The first part, line 1.2, that's the language that requires the PCA to do the design guidance that you can see on Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet. That's the money for the ISTS licensing. That's what remove the requirement for the design guidance. On 1.3 to 1.4, you have the testing that the PCA would be required to do. That's under Senator Berglund's provision on the Minneapolis site. So this just removes the PCA testing requirement, the 24-hour monitoring. The next section, Section 4 replaces an existing section in the bill. Working with Senator Dibble on this, this would remove the cost of the agency. The burden is placed on the owner, and the owner can delegate that responsibility to the person who's operating or to the contractor. And it also narrows down when they have to report, so it won't be quite as often as it would have been under Senator Dibble's original. You can see there was a pretty hefty fiscal note on the original provision. That's on Mr. Mueller's line with Article 1, Section 4, if you look on the sheet. So there was a pretty hefty fiscal note. That would deal with that. Line 1.9 to 1.19 to 1.24. Those are just to align this with the changes that were made in the regular bill and in the budget bill at Senator Bach's amendment. This bill was put together before that those bills were heard in this committee, so that didn't reflect those changes. The deletion of Section 17, 18, and 21, those are the APO authority, and those are that was Senator Fredrickson's bill. The bill did have some fiscal implications with the passage of it. There were some money needs, and there would be some money going to the general fund. So that would be deleted from this bill. The next two lines, 1.28 to 1.29, and then also 1.30, those are that lines up the structures rulemaking provision with what passed in the budget bill, where the agency said that they would do it in the next biennium. So that just lines up the language. The language in here reflected an earlier version of that had had it going along with the shoreland rules, and so this would now update that. Page 24, section 24, that is, Madam Chair, that's that Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District, and that was that's being carried in the tax bill. There are some tax implications from that, so that's being removed from this. And then on the bottom of page 1, the new section 9 that's being inserted, And then there'll be another section later related to this on the appropriation. That's the fee provision that was part of the governor's budget bill. It was not reflected, though, what the Senate, what we have in here is what was reflected in Senator Ress's VHS bill. The fee changes were not in the VHS bill, but they were in the budget bill. And this reflected what was in the VHS bill. And it, so that's a fee. It raises, I think, Mr. Mueller, about $20,000, $21,000 a year. Section 11, or Section 18, excuse me, the subdivision 11, this is this was a provision that was put in here kind of the way Senator Scoy's bill was at the time. The committee, the policy committee, heard a separate bill on this topic and amended it. And this reflects those amendments. But there is one other alteration to it. In talking with staff from the DNR, actually last night, we were working on the bovine TB language. And there's a concern that the penalty, it says radius right now, and they like to square that off. And they have the authority to do that. But the problem is the penalty they want tied to the area. And if they square it off, if you square it off, the penalty, it would be difficult with the penalty. So what this does is, and this was a discussion last night among the group there, that would be the Board of Animal Health's proposed modified accredited zone on line 2.26 to 2.27, rather than the radius provision. It's where they're going to be doing the modified accredited zone. And that seemed to make more sense to everybody last night. So I put it in here. Based on the discussion with the chief authors from the House and Senate for that provision last night. And otherwise, it's the same as what passed Senator Chaudhry's committee last week. And then on 3.18 to 3.19, there was some concern raised by several members on bird feeders with regard to the deer baiting. And so on 3.18 to 3.19, that just spells out that bird feeders containing grains or nuts that are at least 6 feet above the ground are not baiting. And then there is a small appropriation from the Game and Fish Fund to deal with the fishing master angler program. Excuse me. Thank you. And so that's in here. And then on line, or the new section 79. Is the appropriation for the VHS that was also in the governor's proposal, but since the Senate bill didn't have any non-general fund unless it was to replace general fund, this will be carried here then, the appropriation for the VHS. And then on page 81, section 17, that was the provision related to Senator Coring's, the parcel of land, the lease rate on that land for the ski hill up there, ski gull, I think it's called. That's being deleted in here. Apparently, they're working that out outside of here. So, Madam Chair, that's the amendment.
Great. Mr. Mueller, do you want to add anything to that?
Madam Chair, then, going back to my spreadsheet, again, on the note column there, wherever it says aid amendment will minimize, or wherever it has reference to the A8 amendment, it actually is the A10 amendment. And we want to add probably down for the Article 4, Section 17, lost lease revenue. Make a note here that the A10 amendment also removes those revenue losses. So, Madam Chair, the only items really left that have the fiscal impact in the bill would be Article 2, Section 8, which was a DNR provision dealing with the free parking on the Grand Portage State Park. And that's just some shifting of a little bit of money between the Natural Resources Fund and the Working Capital Fund. Again, the article, all the costs up in Article 1 have been dealt with in the amendment, except for there is in Article 1, Section 5, there is a small provision that collects a little bit of new revenue of $43,000 to the Environmental Fund. That's from Senator Chaudhry's bill, the toxic chemical reporting provision. And that'll just go into the fund. It doesn't get appropriated again. Article 2, Section 23, the structures rulemaking, that had $175,000 cost. The amendment will cover that. Again, that language is in the budget bill, and now we're not carrying a cost for that. In Article 3, there's a couple minor costs that the DNR will have to incur within the Game and Fish Fund for producing the walleye stamp of $2,000 per year. That's basically getting the get into their system, and also adjusting some of their regulations for the non-resident spearing. They have a small cost for that. We're not appropriating any new money for those costs. We're just expecting DNR to absorb those costs, at least for now. They'll be collecting new revenues for those items, as we'll see in the revenue area. Again, the master angler, the $10,000, the amendment actually makes a $10,000 appropriation from the Game and Fish Fund for that. On the revenue side of Article 3, the DNR's one put a firm estimate on the revenue for the proposed walleye stamp. This $57,000 is a really rough estimate. If 1% of the people buying a fishing license would then purchase the stamp, and that would be about it'd net out to be about $4 per stamp. So if 1% of the anglers buy a stamp, it'd be about $57,000 that would go into a new account. The changes with dealing with the turkey stamp will bring in about $26,000. This was a DNR proposal. The non-resident spearing change in the bill would bring in about $113,000 per year into the Game and Fish Fund. There's a number of changes in the bill that came from the DNR that simplify the whole deer license system, and that'll be a net loss to the Game and Fish Fund of about $2.1 million per year. Down on Article 4 expenses, I show a $66,000 savings for expedited land exchanges. We're actually tracking that same language as in the budget bill, Senator Cohen's budget bill also. So we're tracking that savings actually in that bill. So I'm just noting it. There is a $66,000 savings, but we're tracking that in another bill. Again, the Article 4, Section 17, lost lease revenue will be those lost revenues will not happen anymore, or will be taken out of the bill with the A-10 amendment. And then all the other land sales in Article 4 generate a little bit of one-time revenue in the general fund, the permanent school fund, and other miscellaneous funds of $28,000 total, $14,000 for the general fund. So the net of this bill actually helps the general fund out by $14,000.
You're doing good work. Yeah. We'll see what happens by the time that we're done with it.
So that's, like I said, that's just a summary of the fiscal items in the bill. Like I said, if anyone's interested in the 25-page fiscal note, I have copies.
All right. Great. Thank you. Are there questions about the amendment or the fiscal note related to the amendment? Senator Hand, is your hand up?
Madam Chair, I have a question, but it's not on the amendment per se. So.
All right. If there's no further discussion, Senator Chaudhry moves the A-10 amendment. Mr. Kelleher, you have a comment on the amendment specifically? All right.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here representing the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. As the bill was drafted, I'm talking about Section 4 and Article 1 of the bill. There was a requirement to notify local officials, local politicians, local legislators, and residents within 1,000 feet of a tank, an underground petroleum storage tank. The amendment that Senator Chaudhry is bringing before you shifts the cost of that notification of $1,100,000 from the PCA to tank owners. In addition to the Petroleum Marketers Association, which own tanks, local governments own tanks, churches and schools own tanks. And it's my understanding that all the tanks in the state of Minnesota have been upgraded since 1998. Also, it's my understanding that all the information that's required in regards to the notification in the bill as it's currently written is already provided by my clients and the petroleum marketers to the PCA, and they have a website, is my understanding, that has this sort of information on the website. So we're sort of questioning what the additional information is going to be needed for, let alone the fact that we would now bear the cost of that notification to local residents and local legislators, and then what would they be doing with that information once we provided it to them at a cost of $1,000,001, which we're not even sure where that number came from.
All right, this is Senator Dibble's provision. We'll let him speak briefly. to this section. In particular, the fiscal aspect of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has the language been substituted? So this is a.
We're just now voting. We have the amendment in front of us. We haven't voted on it yet. So Mr. Kelleher is speaking to the transfer of the responsibility from, I guess, the PCA to the owners. And he said something like $1.2 million you said it will cost. I don't know where that comes from, but that's what it would have been in the original version. But this is a scaled back version of responsibility. So, Senator Dibble, do you want to speak to that?
Madam Chair. I just came back from an errand, so I didn't have benefit of the full extent of the debate or the discussion. But I'll just say very briefly where this whole issue came from. In my Senate district, there is a fuel tank that is being investigated because the property is soon going to be redeveloped. And a little over a year ago, all of the residents in the neighborhood were notified by the contractor who was carrying out the investigation for the owner. They were asked to, you know, let the contractor know if they had any experience of fuel leaking off the site, et cetera. So clearly, that raised a lot of flags for a lot of folks. Something's going on. There's a fuel leak investigation. I'll add parenthetically that there's a high sensitivity in this area to that issue because there's another gas station directly across the street, and fuel did migrate off the site, came into someone's basement. There were huge health consequences for that family. They ended up moving away. It was really bad. So the neighbors are highly tuned and very aware. And within a few months after that initial survey was sent out to all of the residents, folks started calling the PCA, wondering what the status of the investigation was, and got no response and no response and no response back. So they contacted my office. They were, at this point, pretty upset. And so I initiated contact with the PCA, asked what the status of the investigation was, got a little bit of an update, found out, you know, why exactly these neighbors were initially contacted in the first place. And it turns out the explanation given to me was that this was a new process that was put in place when these investigations are being conducted. All the property owners in the area are given a little survey. I said, sounds like you have a little bit more work to do. You need to figure out a way to communicate with folks on a somewhat regular basis the status of the investigation, then when you come to the end of the investigation, the conclusions of the investigation. So could you please initiate a way of enacting a process like that? And by the way, on this particular investigation, please stay in contact with me on a proactive basis so I can keep the neighbors up to date regularly. Went out to a neighborhood meeting. 50 people were gathered. I gave them the update, made all these promises that there would be a regular course of contact, regular updates. That never happened, and I never heard back from the PCA about what kinds of procedures they were going to put in place to tend to this. Folks, a few months later then started reinitiating contact with the PCA. I gave them contacts at the PCA, started reinitiating contacts, heard nothing back. My office then began to inquire exactly what the status was. People got back in touch. At this point, they're again annoyed at the PCA and annoyed with me as well. And I was, needless to say, rather annoyed with the PCA. It's just taken so much effort to make sure that folks are informed about what exactly is going on with an investigation. This is, you know, a gas leak, you know, that's in a fully built neighborhood environment. It's not far from Lake Harriet. It has the experience of the other leak, recent leak, and so it seemed to make sense that we provide for some provisions for folks just to know what's going on in these instances. We put in the original bill that asked the PCA to do all of these things, and PCA came back with an extraordinary fiscal note. So we decided to scale it back significantly, what we originally asked for only those investigations and in certain instances that folks get notified, you know, of investigations and the results of investigations, and I didn't think it was too much of a burden for the owners or their contractors to do so because they're doing that initial communication. They might as well do, you know, an interim and then a post-investigation communication with the affected residents.
Okay. I think that kind of lays it out. So are there questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, I would only add that this is not apply to all storage tanks. It only applies to storage tanks that are discovered to be abandoned. If there's a leak or some release or some corrective action is being taken, or if it's being permanently closed. So this doesn't apply to this doesn't even apply to the installation of a new tank, which I think is probably where the greatest concern would be.
Or the change in ownership of a tank, or Chair, or some of the other
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dibble, how wed are you to the 1,000-foot part? I mean, could we take a little bit of the heartburn out if we maybe brought that number down a little bit?
Well, can you, sorry, just before you answer that, tell me what, I mean, under the existing law, what do they have to, you said this is, they already have to notify?
PCA.
Go ahead. Please answer.
Madam Chair, the short answer to Senator Bach's question is I'm not wedded to the 1,000-foot. We kind of came up with that as I was speaking with Mr. Knopf, our analyst. That kind of keyed off of, when I worked for the city council member, when we were trying to communicate something that was going on in a particular area, whether it was a land use issue or one of these sorts of things, or you name it, we went about a block in either direction from that, it was about 1,000 feet. So when I did my communication with all of the area residents, which I did a few weeks ago, I sent an update on the investigation and copied them on some correspondence I had got from the PCA. We went up the block, the adjoining block faces, but there's nothing magic about 1,000 feet.
Well,
so, Madam Chair,
Senator Bach,
how many feet are in a block? I thought there was 400 and some. What is there? Does it vary by community or?
Senator Rummel, do you know?
By direction. It's a fifth of a mile, 1,000 feet.
Oh, it's 1,000 feet roughly.
Well, that's what
supposed to be a fifth of a mile.
5,280.
My mom always said 8 city blocks are a mile. But that's maybe in a city.
Maybe council.
She's wrong, maybe.
Well, depends on your block.
Really smart.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, in St. Paul, it depends which direction you're going.
If you're there you go.
Shorter to an east and west or longer.
and that's assuming they're in a straight line. Yeah. Mr. Knopf, could you just tell us briefly what the law requires now?
Well, Madam Chair. I think the witness mentioned before was that if you look at the language that the clauses 1 through 4 on the amendment 1.11 to 1.16, all those things right now are required by the owner or operator to be reported to the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency. In fact, there are other things, additional things, when a new tank is some of the ones that Senator Chaudhry and Senator Dibble mentioned. In fact, if you look in the bill language, there's a more extensive list of when things need to be reported. All of those situations currently under current rule of the agency are required to be reported to the agency. What Senator Dibble has here is a shortened down list of some of the items, only where there's a spill, a contamination, or discovery of an abandoned tank or closure of a tank, when in addition to reporting to the agency, they would have to report to neighbors and legislators and other people in the area.
So, Senator Hahn.
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Knopf, just so I understand, then, so there's a set of information that is currently being required to be reported by operators, owners of these tanks to the PCA, and then what this bill would do with the amendment would provide for a subset of that information to also be communicated to people within 1,000 feet. Is that correct, that all the information is being communicated to the PCA, and then in addition to that, a portion would be communicated directly by the owner to the public in the area? Is that correct?
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chairman, Senator Hahn, that's a very succinct way of describing it. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, just
Senator Hahn.
And maybe Senator Dibble, what is the purpose of communicating with the PCA? If is the intent with the PCA to be the instrument of communicating to the public? Is that the intent to do this with the PCA? Or I'm a little concerned or confused by if we've got a process to communicate a problem to an appropriate agency, and then we're depending on the agency to act appropriately, then what would be the value of also requiring that to be communicated in another way to some other group of people? Are we saying that the Pollution Control Agency is not doing what it should do, or in possible to do, or capable of doing what it should do? Or, I mean, if that's the problem, I think we'd address that with the PCA rather than putting another burden on them.
Well, Senator Hand, I think that was his original proposal, was to require them to do it because they're not doing it, and they said it'll cost them money to do it, and so they're not going to do it unless we give them money. So that's why we're here.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Kelleher.
The legislature and the proposal then is shifting the burden of that cost onto the owners of the tanks. And I think the problem from what I've heard today is it's a problem with the Pollution Control Agency. I don't know that having information disseminated from a private business to residents and local legislators would have the same weight as if that information was dispensed from a state agency.
Well, Mr. Kelleher, I guess we can decide whether we think it's appropriate for the owner of a tank that's leaking to have that responsibility. I think that might be appropriate. That is what we're doing, is changing the responsibility. You're absolutely correct. Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair and Senator Dibble, I could understand a business contacting surrounding property owners and the state agency. But I'm thinking of a situation where perhaps an individual homeowner discovers, much to their chagrin, that there's an abandoned underground tank, and if it perhaps is an older individual that hasn't gotten into computer and email, that this might be an undue burden for an owner of a home to make this kind of contact with neighbors. And I'm wondering if there's a way that this could be changed to exempt an individual homeowner.
Who has a tank under their
Madam Chair,
that's
right, an leaking. Abandoned tank that they might not even know is there.
Hmm. Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, that sounds reasonable. My goal is to deal with these gas stations that are conducted, you know, that are part of this fuel tank investigation program. In those instances that, you know, exactly those instances that I cited, you've got an abandoned gas station or a leaking tank for whatever reason, and folks are being alerted that something's going on around them, and they have no ability to access any follow-up information about status of the investigation or the outcome of the investigation.
Tanks have a certain size, too.
Okay. Mr. Knopf's going to check the statute book to see if we have a definition of who an owner is.
Well, Madam Chair, a couple of things.
This would apply to.
Madam Chair, Senator Frakes, a couple of things. One, this is 10 days after notifying the agency, so they have to notify any of these items. They have to notify the agency of under current rule. So we're only dealing with the people who currently have to notify the agency. And so if the person you're talking about, I know there's a size limit. I'm looking for it right now and finding that there's a size limit on the tanks. I'm not sure if you're talking about where there was previously a gas station and they don't know about it, or if there's an underground oil tank that was used by the home, which are generally excluded from that definition.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Knopf, I was thinking of the situation where perhaps at one time the site had been a gas station and now had a home on it. And I can think of one situation in my district where that's occurring right now, where an old gas station has been removed and they've moved a house onto that site.
Really? I'm surprised, Senator Fredrickson. I can't imagine that happening in the city, but it's I suppose it could happen anywhere.
There were a lot, Madam Chair, there were a lot of small gas stations around rural communities. Mm-hmm. The gas station has disappeared, and I don't know what's happened to the tanks. I'm assuming they were taken out, but maybe not.
Actually, come to think of it, I think I've seen some, you know, kind of architectural gems of old gas stations that were converted into houses, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in Minnesota, but I've seen those in other places.
Oh,
okay.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
The term owner is defined. Owner means a person who owns an underground storage tank and a person who owned it immediately before discontinuation of its use.
Okay.
So it doesn't include the owner of the tank before it was discontinued from use.
So does and mean both? It has to be both? It has to meet both of those?
Well, Madam Chair, the question would be is whether, you know, who owns the tank after it's been sold. It does say both, but I think the concern here is to make sure the responsibility is on somebody.
Senator Fredrickson, you think that?
Madam Chair, I think that covers with my concern.
Good. Excellent. Thank you for asking. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you both for your testimony, Mr. Kelleher, Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the A-10 amendment from the committee? All right. Senator Chaudhry moves the A-10 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion does prevail. All right. Senator Chaudhry, you want to just go through the bill? We haven't really done that yet. Briefly?
We've gone through the fiscal aspects of it?
I think we're good with the fiscal aspects of it because we have the spreadsheet that reflects what's in the bill now as amended. Unless there's questions on that, but I think we're...
Maybe we should just take amendments.
We've covered that.
Maybe we should just take amendments.
Senator Chaudhry, it might be nice just to briefly tell us what's in the bill. That's kind of standard procedure. You can just do that very, very quickly. Just go through the different sections.
Mr. Knopf can go through that.
That's fine. Well, Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, Ms. Doyle can go through Article 1 and Article 2, and then I'll take Article 3 and 4, unless you want me to.
I don't have any.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'll just go through it real quickly. Article 1 is environmental policy, and it includes Senator Sparks' bill on this ISTS. It's got the construction debris provision from Senator Metzen. It has the part from Senator Berglund's bill as it was amended in committee dealing with the city of Minneapolis. And then, of course, the local notification requirements, that was changed. It has the provision for the basically the reporting of releases of substances that was from Senator Chaudhry's bill. Article 2 has a number of provisions that were in Senator Saxhog's and others' bills dealing with the natural resource policy. That starts on page 6. You got the Forest for the Futures program. That's the easements. Then you've got some provisions from Senator Chaudhry's DNR technical bill in Section 2 dealing with monuments, basically, because monuments are not part of the outdoor part of the state park system anymore. And that's just a technical change. Then you've got the free entrance, the permanently totally disabled veterans. That was Senator Kubley's provision. And then you've got some other park provisions that were part of the basically cleanup from the DNR. Section 10 is the alternative recording of state forest roads. That was from Senator Saxhog's bill. And you've got the citizen oversight subcommittees. That's just a... basically a technical change that was part of the technical amendment and just renaming some of the divisions within DNR that have had their name changes. Names changed. The Star Lakes provision is from Senator Olson, Senator Mary Olson's bill, Section 12 and 13. Section 14 was that provision of Senator Stumps dealing with the Wetlands Conservation Act applying in the greater than 80% area to kind of reinstate an existing exemption that was in there last year but repealed by last year's legislature. It would put it in a more limited situation. Section 15 is from Senator Saxhog's bill dealing with conservation easements, wetland bank credit. Section 16 and 17 are no longer in for the amendment. Section 18 is no longer in. Section 19 deals with the Star Lake and River signs. Section 20 deals with the first meeting for the Star Lake and River Board or the Star Lake Board. Section 21 is not in there anymore. Section 22, that was Senator Rosen's bill dealing with the Wanton County Soil and Water Conservation District Supervisor, and this reflects the language that was adopted by the committee. Section 23 is the rulemaking provision. Again, this was amended from Senator Mary Olson's bill dealing with the rulemaking on structures. It was amended to also reflect the same language that was passed in the budget bill. Section 24 is no longer there. Repealers are just some basic cleanup repealers that the department has offered in the repealing language. Article 3 is a combination of kind of the game and fish bill as it came to committee. And as I mentioned earlier, the VHS provisions that were also traveled separately and actually passed by the Senate in Senator Rest's bill, and so that's basically what's in the game and fish provisions. I'll go over maybe a couple of specific items that were not part of the original bills. You can see that on Section 17, that was one of the, on page 32, that was one of the pieces that was changed. You also have, as was mentioned earlier in the discussion of the spreadsheet, you have the walleye stamp provisions are kind of littered throughout here. You've got the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Lessard Heritage Enhancement Council that's already passed the Senate in the budget bill. You have the, I'm on page 39 now, you have the turkey stamps where it was the department's recommendation that the money go with, be charged just on the license and to do away with the required sale of the stamp. They'll still will sell a pictorial stamp, get the more walleye stamp. Again, more walleye stamp. Then you also have the the simplification. You saw that in Mr. Mueller's spreadsheet also. There's a considerable loss to the Game and Fish Fund due to the simplification of the firearms and muzzleloader and archery deer seasons and the licensing process. But that's, again, littered throughout here, starting on pages like 46 and 47. And you've got a number of provisions. And then on page 48, this is where we bring in shelters. Under the licensing, so it's a fish house, dark house, or a shelter. So even if somebody doesn't fish from it, but if it's left on the ice overnight, well, unless it's changed as it is in here, then it would require a license from DNR. Let's see. Again, just a number of game and fish provision changes. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, how much you want me to go through a lot of this. I think most members are pretty familiar with this. You have on page 53, you have the shining provision. From Senator Senjem's bill, changing the shining that was heard by the policy committee. You've also got a number of, I mean, these are all heard by the policy committee. You have the baiting provision that was part of the original bill. And the transporting, and then you've got a number of provisions related to the aquatic life that was part of Senator Rest's bill. You've got the rule, now that a couple of significant ones that one of them I kind of blew by pretty quickly here, just to be clear with people. On the bottom of page 57, you have the non-toxic shot required for taking small game in certain areas. That's the 2011 date in the ag area on public land with prohibiting non-toxic shots, so it would be steel or other non-toxic substances after that date. So that's one that's a fairly significant change in here. You also have, and just in section 60, or page 60, section 64, this is from Senator Bach's provision last year dealing with a dark house or fish house left unattended on the ice overnight. This would change it. Instead of unattended overnight, it was anytime it's left unattended, they would be required to have a license for the structure. And then in section 75 on page 63, you have the rule amendment that would reduce the possession limit to 4 walleye and sauger in the aggregate. And so those are some significant changes that I wanted to point out to members. Otherwise, there's the general provisions that I mentioned. The state lands Article 4, is just generally all of the things that were from the land subcommittee, including all of the land sales. It also has this expedited exchanges involving state and local government subdivisions. That's actually passed already in the budget bill by the Senate. And then you've got this land replacement trust fund in Itasca County, additions to state parks, subtractions from state parks. And then, again, all of the land sales. I don't think we can need to go over all the individual land sales that are in here. They were, again, heard by the policy committee. But that's basically the rest of the bill are the land sale provisions that are contained within.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman.
Question for Senator Chaudhry.
Just a comment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry. You might want to delete section 22 on page 23, the Watonwan Soil and Water Conservation appointees, because it seems to me I saw last Wednesday or Thursday that bill was coming back from the House, having passed the House also. So that very well may have been signed into law by the governor by now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson. We left it in there because we weren't sure,
right. But
someone wants to take it out and they are certain that it will become law. We could certainly delete it.
Are you certain it will become law, Senator Frederickson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just raising it, okay. Something in check between now and the floor. And
or full finance. Good comment. Other comments from the committee on the Senator Hand?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question, and I apologize for not being aware of this before. I just heard about this today, but I'm curious, and maybe Senator Chaudhry, you can. This has to do with Article 1, Section 3, that has to do with the site permit for, it's on page 5, I think. And I had actually somebody come to me today and say that there was this provision in your bill, and They were concerned about it because the original bill was introduced as a means of preventing the facility being described from being operable, and that the language has changed to, in effect, do just the opposite of that. And I'm just curious, is that exact? Did I hear that correctly from this individual, or is that not the case?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, no. And I just want to mention that there's, you know, before I answer, there's been a lot of lobbying going on a lot of bills that are provisions of this bill. We in the policy committee had lengthy hearings on most of these bills, and some of them were controversial. Some of them reached compromises. Some, the majority of the policy committee just felt was appropriate. Now, it's not my ability to challenge your right to question a lot of the policy questions or get into a whole policy debate, but I just want to preface that with there's lots of lobbying going on from folks who perhaps aren't satisfied with a compromise or aren't satisfied with the bill. But on this particular issue, this was a proposal by Senator Berglund to prevent a wood chip burning plant in Minneapolis from being allowed a permit. This type of plant is of the nature that it doesn't even need to go through the formal environmental assessment process because of its low emissions and the nature of its nature of the facility. The residents, and as well as Senator Berglund, disagreed. They felt that there were concerns with emissions, and so she introduced a bill to prevent the plant from going forward. We heard the issue. I included Senator Berglund's bill to prevent the permit from being issued in my delete all amendment in the policy committee. There was an amendment to delete it. It was clear that Senator Berglund's provision was going to be removed from the overall policy bill, and so we discussed a potential compromise, or not necessarily a compromise, but some way to address some of the concerns relating to emissions reporting, some of the noise issues, and as well as some of entertain some of the employment issues in the locality. Yes, I have heard as well that there is not satisfaction with that. No, it's not. It doesn't. The what's in the bill now does not seek to replace the intent of the bill, of the original bill. But it was thought that it was better than nothing.
And Senator Chaudhry, I think, and Senator Hahn, I know Senator Berglund had asked to address the committee to talk about that, and I think there may be an amendment, so we can wait till that occurs to really delve into this in more detail. I know Senator Berglund wanted to be here. Here she is.
Why don't we deal with it now?
Well, that's fine.
On the topic?
She's here. Come on in. Senator Berglund, we just started talking about the section of the bill that we know you're concerned about. Senator Torres-Ray.
Madam Chair, I am glad that Senator Berglund is here. I was ready to move this on her behalf. Members of the committee, this is an issue that impacts both of our districts, and we have had extensive communication with members of the community to talk about this project, and the city today continues to gather community members to talk about this project. Members, our communities are opposed to this project, and mainly because many of the questions that have been asked by the community with respect to pollution have not been answered. Those questions, we have not received answer to those questions, and Senator Berglund will speak to that issue as well. And that is one of the reasons she put together this proposal for us. And I will argue that the city has been doing extensive work in this area, and I do not believe that it will be appropriate for us at this point to propose a state legislation to address that issue.
Senator Berglund, I'm not permitting testimony on bills that have been debated in the policy committees, but as a courtesy, as a member of the Senate, we'll let you address the committee briefly on this issue, but we're only allowing...
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and the reason is because what's before you is not what I brought to Senator Chaudhry's committee.
And I know that experience, Senator Berglund. That's happened to me a lot this year.
And, in fact, it's sort of the opposite of what I brought to the committee. I did have an amendment, an author's amendment, and it was adopted. And, you know, the indication was that it would be included in the omnibus bill. I had no idea it was going to be changed to have exactly the opposite impact of what the original bill had meant to do. And so I think it's only fair that I get to speak to the committee about it. My community, as Senator Torres Ray has indicated, is very much opposed to having this burner in our district. And I think we've made available, or we have ready to be passed out, a map of Hennepin County. And it shows that this community has one of the highest rates of asthma hospitalizations per 1,000 people in the county. And we know that this wood burner will be emitting, over 13,000 pounds of benzene, over 5,000 pounds of stearine, over 147 pounds of carbon tetrachloride, 69 pounds of arsenic. And I might add, this is a PCA cleanup site for arsenic because of a plant that was located there many years ago, a fertilizer plant that used arsenic in the fertilizer, and it blew around and landed in people's yards, and so now we have yards being dug up and the soil being replaced by the federal government because of the high dangerous levels of arsenic. The list of things that will be emitted by the burner go on and on. I'm not here to say that this type of facility should be banned from the state of Minnesota, but I do not think that this is a good location for it in light of all of the other things that are going on in that neighborhood, all of the other emissions that are being put on this neighborhood. And so I introduced a bill that just said that, you know, in this particular location, we should not have permit issued to build this facility. And now what you have in there is that the permit absolutely will be issued if a few more jobs are provided, exactly 7 more jobs. My community is not willing to trade the health of their children for 7 more jobs.
All right. Are there any amendments on this issue? Let's get to the members. We don't really want to have a debate about the policy. Senator Torres Ray, are you offering an amendment?
And Madam Chair, just one other thing, since you are a finance committee. I had this amendment drafted in a way that there would be no fiscal impact.
The A2 amendment that we had passed out?
I haven't gotten a copy of that. My original amendment, as the bill was drafted, had no fiscal impact. That was one of the reasons we drafted it that way.
We just passed this out, and we thought it came from you, so... I believe this is the amendment that you had proposed to the Environment Policy Committee.
Yes, this is what I had proposed. So I thought you had a different amendment.
So this has no... Okay. So, Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify that. The handout that you reviewed earlier, it shows $547,000 of cost in 09 and 66. Are those costs deleted as a result of the A2 amendment or A10 amendment?
Yes.
All those costs are deleted?
Yes.
Thank you.
So there's no cost as of the bill. As the form that it's in, Senator Chaudhry's bill, is not a cost to the general fund at this point. All right, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment. I have been trying to figure out. We proposed an amendment originally. I drafted an amendment originally to delete the language that was incorporated precisely because of what Senator Berglund just stated, that this language that is now in the bill basically is exactly the opposite of what she offered. In other words, if you see in line 425, her original language said the agency may not issue a permit. The compromise that was made is now the agency may issue. So that is just really not a compromise. This is exactly the opposite. So I would like to offer an amendment to reincorporate the word not. And it's a simple amendment. However, the language that was incorporated in page 5 after on 5.9 is language that is new. So I think that to make this a little bit more organized, I would like to reincorporate the language that was inserted in the bill by Senator Berglund. And so to reinstate the language that was originally in the bill and delete the language that it is here now.
Senator Torres Ray, I think what you're proposing is to delete everything in Section 3 and offer as an alternative the language of the A2 amendment.
That is correct, Madam Chair. That would be the better option.
As it amends the bill.
It's a delete everything. It's not. It's not a delete everything. So you have to look at the original bill, which you have 3393, which was passed out, and the A2 amendment together, because it would delete everything after page 1, line 18, everything after facility. So basically, it would say that after July 1st, 2008, the PCA could not issue a permit to a facility that would meet the conditions of the A2 amendment. And
so this is very narrowly. Madam Chair, this is very narrowly drawn just to affect my district.
And Madam Chair.
And so, Senator Berglund, the way that the A2 amendment is drafted, it would prohibit the facility from opening at that location. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Hand.
I just want to clarify, as I'm looking at these two things, the A2 amendment to the original 3393 says delete on line 18, everything after the word facility, and insert the new language, but it doesn't deal with lines 119, 120, and 121. And I just wanted to check with counsel to see if those lines need to be deleted as well.
I'm sorry, Senator Hand, what?
I'm just trying to understand the amendment that is being offered here, which is to take the 3393 language and amend it with the A2 language, but the A2 amendment says to delete words after facility on lines 1.19, but it is silent on lines 1.19, 120, and 121, and I would think that those would have to be deleted as well for this.
I think you're correct. I think you're right, Senator Hand.
Madam
Chair.
He's correct, Madam Chair.
Ms. Doyle.
That correction was made in the when the bill was heard, when we offered this amendment. We did make the correction to the amendment.
Okay. So we should incorporate, delete everything on line 1.19, 1.20, 1.21.
Madam Chair, that's how I would read the substitute language on A2 would require the deletion of those three lines plus the words without analyzing on 1.18. And I just wanted to confirm that with counsel that that's the way the amendment would read.
All right. Senator Torres Ray, would you incorporate that into your amendment?
I'm trying to organize it. Yes.
I am
just
yes,
trying
to.
I'm trying to make sure
otherwise.
That's what we intended to do, but
yes,
I will work
is.
With the staff to
make
sure.
Sure. Yes.
Correct.
Senator Rummel.
If we're making the amendments to the original bill or are we making the amendments to the...
We will do this. This is being offered as one amendment, which would strike in Section 3. It would strike the language that's in there and substitute the language that's incorporated in these two documents, Senate File 3393, as amended by the A2 amendment, and Senator Torres Ray's oral amendment.
Including lines 1.18, et cetera. And
So this the
original
A.
Bill. I just want to get the word not back on line 4.25. And
well, that'll all be stricken. So we're not going there.
So this
that,
language,
all that language,
this
all the language.
In
Section 3 will be removed from the bill if this amendment were to pass.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is everybody clear? I know it's a little different procedure. All right.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
And obviously there's probably a lot of people here who'd love to testify on this, but this is the exact same provision that was heard in Senator Chaudhry's committee, so I don't think we need to repeat that discussion. Unless members have questions they want to ask someone, are we clear on what's in front of us? All right. Well, Senator Chaudhry.
I'll move to divide the amendment between the A2 and Senate file 3393.
How do you do that? Oh. How do you divide it? Senator Chaudhry, how, what would that?
So it will
be. I don't
be,
understand how that would work.
So the one part of the amendment will be to delete the new language, the, you know, the jobs, emissions, trucks.
In your bill.
Correct. And then the other amendment would be to insert Senate file 3393.
Well, Senator Chaudhry, I think those are inconsistent with each other, because one says the facility has to do something, and the other says the facility may not be permitted.
Right.
So how do you have those two things? It seems internally inconsistent. Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, just get a clarification. Senator Chaudhry, I think you stated it two different ways there. I just want to make sure I'm clear. What you want to do is deleting that section to be your one part of the amendment. The second amendment is to add the contents of 3393 as amended by the A2 amendment. So this will be one motion to delete the section from the bill. Then it's gone. Then the second part would be to add this new provision.
I see. You want to do two separate votes on so deleting what's in your bill and adding the new language.
So there
sorry,
be
I didn't understand that.
There would be,
gotcha.
Yeah, Madam Chair, there would be an opportunity to
yes.
remove the current offending language, and then an opportunity to vote.
Insert the new language.
Insert the original
okay.
bill.
Okay. All right. That's appropriate, Senator Chaudhry, as to divide that. Senator Saxon.
And Madam Chair, if I could ask counsel, what would be the effect then, let's say, if we voted to delete the existing language and voted not to add that amendment?
Well, Senator Saxon, I don't know. Is this bill moving in the House? I mean, maybe there may be a House position that could come up in conference committee, but basically there'd be, if we voted to delete it, there'd be no Senate position on this issue, one way or the other. Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, I met deadline in the Senate Policy Committee, but the bill didn't move out of the Policy Committee as a separate bill.
Right.
So now my separate bill is dead in the Senate. And as a result of my separate bill being dead in the Senate, I don't know where or what is happening with it in the House. I am fairly certain, as these things usually go, that if it's moving, they had to find another vehicle for it.
Right. So, as I said, it could pop up in an omnibus, in the whatever the this bill gets conferred with in the House. It could potentially be in that. We don't know. But the Senate would basically have no position one way or the other on this. If we just delete the language and don't adopt the new language, your bill would be basically dead in the Senate, I guess. Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
I just want to emphasize that's not because of anything to do with process. This was not – Senator Berglund's bill, 3393, is not in our omnibus bill because there was not support from the committee. And the only reason we put the existing language in there is because it was thought that it might be better than nothing. If we do nothing, the PCA will simply go forward with its current plans. There will be nothing regarding emission reports or anything like that. But, I mean, if we thought that would help, but if Senator Berglund does not want that in there, Senator Torres Ray does not want that in there, we can take it out. But the reason the original bill was not in there was because there was not support.
Okay. All right, I think we understand
support.
This. Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, did the Policy Committee vote down the original bill, the early bill, or what?
No.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, it was the original bill was included in my delete all amendment, okay. My policy bill. There was a motion to delete it entirely. Before we voted on it, we came up with this language. So the amendment to delete it all was withdrawn, and so this current language was put in.
Senator Berglund.
And Madam Chair and Senator Bach, this all happened without my knowing about it or my being invited to the meeting to discuss it. And so when I left the meeting and when my constituents left the meeting, we were under the impression that the bill that I had brought to the committee was being included in the omnibus bill. Now, at a minimum, I would like nothing of this language to be in the bill. If it's possible to include my language, I would like that, but at a minimum, I want none of the original, none of the language that's in the omnibus bill now to be in that bill, because it's complete opposite of what my constituents asked me to do. I'm getting calls now every day asking how in the world this could have happened to my bill.
All right. I think we understand the issue. Let's, Senator Chaudhry, is it appropriate to vote first on deleting the language of Section 3? Should we do that first?
Senator Torres-Ray really has a choice.
I'm sorry, Senator Torres-Ray is the maker of the motion. Is that all right with you to vote on deleting Section 3 first?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. So the first vote would be on deleting the language of Section 3, and then we will take a vote after that on inserting the language that Senator Torres-Ray and Senator Berglund have proposed. All right? Any questions? All right. On the first motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no? The motion does prevail. All right. The language is deleted from the bill. Senator Torres-Ray moves the insertion of the language of Senate File 3393 as amended in the amendment and with the oral amendment. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no? The motion prevails.
Thank you very much, members.
All right. Are there any other amendments? Senator Parisot.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have the A13 amendment. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, it is it's a very small amount of language on the sheet that's new, and it has to do with aquatic macrophytes. And Mr. Hirsch from the department, Steve Hirsch, is verifying that the department is in full support of this, and if he would like to come to the table and make any comments, I think this might be the time for him to do it. Still in the room?
Well, let's see if there's questions. Senator Chaudhry, have you seen this amendment? Are you in support of it?
Madam Chair,
do we need some explanation?
No, I haven't. Madam Chair, I've not seen this, and it's kind of a new issue, and this is kind of like a bill. We're going to have to start hearing it and getting testimony. And
Senator Parisot, was this part of a bill? Or is this a... Is this an issue we've had any discussion about? I guess I don't even know what macrophytes
well,
are.
Sorry. It's about invasive species, Madam Chair. It's okay. About invasive species. And so Mr. Hirsch can probably clarify a lot of anybody's questions.
And Mr. Hirsch is?
DNR.
From the DNR?
Yes.
All right.
Madam Chair, are we going to start taking policy testimony on new issues?
Well, Senator Chaudhry, we can at least answer on an amendment that we can at least give him the courtesy of having a minute to tell us what it does. And then we'll decide.
Well, I didn't get the courtesy of knowing that this amendment was coming from either department or Senator Parisot.
No, I appreciate that, and it would have been helpful.
I just received it a short time before coming.
Mr. Hirsch, come on up and give us one minute explanation of this, and then the committee will decide if we have enough information to take a vote or if it needs to be discussed more in the policy committee.
Madam Chair, members, Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological Resources. And first to clarify, this isn't a department bill. This is a bill that was passed in the House. There was some interest in some of our constituents there in clarifying some of the language having to do with launching boats with aquatic macrophytes, which are just a fancy word for aquatic plants. And probably should say aquatic plants instead of aquatic macrophytes. And this is basically just a technical clarification that it's illegal. You know, you can see in this, if you look in Section 1 of the bill, has you know, a provision that says that a person may place waters of the person may place a trailer, except unless otherwise prohibited by law, a person may place in the waters stated watercraft or trailer with aquatic macrophytes, and then it lists certain ways that you can where you can do that. And in clause 2 there, it just clarifies that in this case the blinds have to be on the watercraft and not the trailer. So it's just a simple technical correction. And then in Section 2, it adds the term aquatic macrophytes to the clause there to make it clear that it's unlawful to attempt to place launch a boat with aquatic plants attached. And this is consistent with other places in law. There's a penalty provisions that you don't see on the bill here that talk about penalties if you launch a boat with aquatic plants. So it's basically just a very simple technical correction to the language.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Chaudhry,
Madam
do you have
Chair,
an opinion about this?
Madam Chair, I guess advice from counsel is this going to have to go to judiciary if we pass this.
Any thoughts from...
Well, Madam Chair, the issue that I think Senator Chaudhry is raising is the civil citations. Are we expanding the civil citations? And yes, you are, although this is prohibited already in law, as Mr. Hirsch mentioned, in the penalty section. So the question is, and this is, civil citations are just one form of that. I don't know. This would be a call of the chair of the Judiciary Committee whether or not this would need to go there. But I don't know on the face of it whether you'd say that it'd have to go there. It doesn't appear to. It seems like more of a technical amendment to what the department thought was in there to begin with.
Senator Chaudhry, if we if no one objects to adopting the language, we could adopt it, and then with the understanding that if you get called into a policy committee, I would say we could just talk to the chair and say you'll take this out. Okay. In finance, so that you know, that because that could kill your bill, and we certainly don't want it to hold up the bill. All right. Is there any? Does anyone want to move this? Oh, Senator Parris will move this.
I move it, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion on the 813 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Any further amendments?
Chair.
Senator Hand.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess just reflecting on the discussion we had earlier with respect to the A-10 amendment and the clarification of the issue that was raised by Mr. Kelleher, that is the language that was deleted in Section 4 on page 5 and replaced with the language in the A-10 amendment. I'd like to move to delete that new Section 4 language from the bill. I guess as I've thought about this, I'm just thinking that I don't know how widespread the problem is that is trying to be addressed here. It seems as if there was an instance where the PCA apparently didn't do an effective job of communication, and I'm not sure that passing a law that would be as encompassing as this is good policy. If we have a problem in communication with the PCA, I would think we should address that rather than try to create an additional communication mandate that seems to be redundant. So I'm just going to move that we delete Section 4 that we adopted in the A-10 amendment.
I think that's what he's looking for.
Senator Hand, you're moving to delete the whole section, so we wouldn't have the amended language or the original language?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's what...
About local notification requirements?
I believe that's...
Okay. Madam Chair?
Mr. Knopf.
I think the way to do that, I think, as I understand, Senator Hand, it would... So on, if you look at the A-10 amendment, on 1.5, you delete everything after 4, and then you delete lines 1.6... through 1.18, and so then the amendment would still say page 5 delete section 4, but it wouldn't insert a new section, so
okay.
it would not be in the bill at all in any form.
Thank you, counsel. I appreciate that. That's what my intent was to not put anything in the bill that would change the current notification requirements. So that's exactly what my intention would be.
All right. Does everyone? So we're deleting the language that we just voted, that we just adopted. That's the motion. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I have a question for counsel. We currently have exemptions to the underground storage tank issue in 116.47, and we exempt things like looking down abandoned septic tanks. And I'm just wondering if this notification, if an individual finds an abandoned septic tank on their property, are they now subject to the notification requirements because we don't specifically pick up these exemptions to this notification? I think this might be a lot broader than we think. Council, it's 116.47 where we make some exemptions to the underground storage tank. Do we need to make a reference to this notification language?
Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Senator Bach, yeah, that's a good point. It does for some reason that exemption section only lists certain sections that are would be that, yeah. So that what we need to do is go back. Either that. Well, I think that the cleanest way would be to also amend 116.47 and add in 116.482, the new section in that list of items of places where those that are basically where the exemptions apply. That'll be one way. Or you could on here you could basically say that an owner. Unless exempted under 116.4, that might be the easiest way at this point in time, is just on 1.7 before and insert unless exempted under 116.47.
Where are you, Mr. Knopf? You're on
1.7 of the A10 amendment.
After state legislators? Maybe you meant.
Well, 1.7.
You said before and?
Before and.
Ann. Sorry, I thought you said and.
Right at the beginning of the sentence.
Thank you. Okay. Unless, now that makes sense.
Unless exempted under section 116.47.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator,
I think we might have a motion in front of us, but I do think, I mean, recognizing these exemptions, I think is important to me to know if I'm going to support the Hann Amendment or not, because if the intent... I think the intent, maybe unknowingly, of Senator Dibble's language is anybody who finds an abandoned septic tank or any of these other things that are exempted would fall into these notification requirements, and I don't believe that's his intent. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess...
You're right, Senator Bach, that he's focusing on these, you know, gas tanks, more or less, is his concern. So I think that's a good suggestion. Senator Hann, what do you want to do? Do you want to...
Madam Chair, and I appreciate the... desire to narrow the scope of the what Senator Dibble was trying to do. I just thought that given the discussion we had that it would be preferable to leave the law as it exists today and not modify it at all.
So my intent
would be to say let's just restore the language as it is today and not put any additional requirements on the law.
All right. Let's vote on Senator Hann's motion to take the language out completely, and then we can, if that does not
prevail,
we can vote on Senator Bach's motion to change the language. All right. On Senator Hann's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Bach.
No, Madam Chair, if counsel would suggest how we include the exempted tanks into the notification requirements.
Well, Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, I think on line 1.7, after a parent or before an, insert unless exempted under section 116.47, comma, and that would read an owner shall directly notify all. So basically, unless if they're not an exempt tank, then they need to do it.
Let's just get it.
I think that makes sense. I think that gets where Senator Dibble wants to go without dragging in a whole bunch of tanks that are exempted under current law.
Yeah. Senator Buck, I think that's a good suggestion, and I don't think Senator Dibble would oppose that. It certainly keeps the bill where he was headed. All right. On the Senator Bach motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, if I can go back to the issue I raised about Watonwan soil and water conservation, a Senate council has checked the status of that bill, and the governor has signed that into law.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, I would
so it doesn't
move
need
page
to be
23,
any place,
delete
though.
Section 22.
Page
23, Section 22.
Right, Senator Chaudhry?
Support the amendment.
Sounds good. On that motion, any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry?
Madam Chair, I've got the A7. Madam Chair, this is the ballast water issue. This is a issue that was heard at length in the policy committee. We did not do anything on it in the policy committee. We were hoping that some type of agreements could be possibly made between stakeholders. That is not possible. So what has been drafted here is what I feel is a bare-bones type proposal on ballast water. Senator Rest will explain it in detail, but basically all it does with the original bill is establish definitions and require a ballast water management plan for each ship, and then there's, you know, there's a requirement to maintain a log book. And that's the extent of it. And Senator Rest really wanted, has been working on this and would like to speak on it.
All right. Welcome, Senator Rest. Very briefly, please.
Yes. Well, Madam Chair and members, Senator Chaudhary has, I think, adequately described what the this very much scaled-back version of the original bill, which was a very ambitious one concerning ballast water discharges in Lake Superior. And he's quite correct. All it does is to set forward now some definitions to make sure that we can have a framework for a discussion of ballast water. And it provides for, without setting standards or anything like that in Minnesota law, it it just requires vessels to have a ballast water management plan, which, quite frankly, most of them have books and books that describe their ballast water management plan, so that should not be a burden on them, and ask them to count, keep a record of it, a log of it, and then ask for the commissioner of the PCA to also provision for cooperation and consultation with others that are concerned with ballast water and invasive species, other agencies, and with Canada and with the Great Lakes Panel on Aquatic Nuisance Species, which currently the commissioner of the DNR is a member, and would specify that the commissioner of PCA would be a the alternate representing Minnesota. So it is a very, again, very much scaled back from the original bill, and I appreciate the courtesy of Senator Chaudhary of not agonizing over the far more aggressive an ambitious bill in the policy committee, but allowing us to continue to work on it, and in particular working with the PCA to come up with this much more modest proposal and just a framework for, quite frankly, discussion going forward of what the PCA is going to be dealing with this summer and fall anyway.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Chaudhary, I mean, you and I are on both these committees, so we had a long and extensive hearing on this, on the original bill, and put it on the table, and we didn't vote on it. And then when the omnibus bill came up, and we spent a lot of time on that, it wasn't in there either. So I'm somewhat at a loss, even in some type of a modified manner, why this is is coming back and have some of the same questions. One of them is in terms of the ships. You know, I think most of our problems have been caused by the ballast from ships we call salties. You know, ocean-going ships, and the fact remains, Minnesota ships an awful lot of its pellets and its nuggets, and eventually its steel and its grain, just to domestic ports on Lakers, and I'm concerned that we aren't differentiating between the two. And I agree that we need to do some study on this. I just am not sure we need to pass any legislation right now in this manner.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Saxog, on the process question, as I mentioned in my opening remarks on this amendment, the hope was is that some sort of resolution between the stakeholders could have come forward, and we could insert it at some point. That wasn't coming forth, and we had even passed our policy committee markup day. That still didn't happen. Although, you know, we could have tried and forced something that day as well, but we wanted, at least I wanted to hold off and see if something could develop. That didn't happen, Senator Rest has came to me with a much scaled-down version, and it just simply says, as Senator Rest asked to mention, is that it really just kind of asked them to do what most of them are already doing. The differentiation, I think Senator Rest will speak to this a little bit more, is that the problem we're grappling with is that 90% of the traffic is freshwater traffic, or the lakers that they're called. And so when we're talking about federal government action on saltwater vessels, we're only dealing with a small portion of the problem. Not to mention the fact that there have been invasive species discovered in our current Great Lakes. So the concern is not always what's going to come in from foreign countries, but what's going to come in from other Great Lakes into Lake Superior. So that's the differentiation. I know there's disagreement on all of that, but that's where we're coming from.
Did you want to add?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I would just point out, in terms of things that were in the original bill, we're not talking about the requirements for no bombs, the no ballast on board issue. We're not talking about the IMO, the International Maritime Standards. That's not that's not in the bill. We're not talking about the mandating a particular kind of permit. We're not setting the standards for initial permits. We're not limiting the ability of a vessel to do ballast water discharge or intake. None of that is in this bill or is in this amendment. We're not talking about waivers. We're not talking about permissible or impermissible discharges. We're not talking about the limiting the routes that vessels may take. We're not talking about prohibited areas. We're not talking about ballast water requirements. We're not talking about high-risk vessels. We're not talking about laboratories. All of that is out of this. We're not talking about design requirements for ballast water operations. We're not talking about sediment. We do ask, besides the definitions, which are a lot of language here, but just to, as a way of talking about the program, we are saying that people ought to have a ballast water plan, and most of them do, and so it's just acknowledging that. And then it's saying we are keeping in to have a record book of ballast water discharges. We are not talking about detention of vessels. We took out all kinds. We took out the penalty language, and we left in the consultation and cooperation by the DNR and the PCA and the. The Great Lakes panel on aquatic nuisance species. We took out the rapid response plan, and we took out the emergency planning for VHS. Of course, that's being dealt with in this bill as well as others. So most, again, of what is in this amendment, definitions. Acknowledging ballast water management plans, asking that ships keep a record, which those two things I think they already do, and to and for the PCA to engage in consultation and cooperation. It really is a framework for the discussion, and rather than, again, the which I even would say, a very ambitious and very aggressive bill that we had to introduce as Senate file, whatever it was, 63.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm very uncomfortable voting on this, not hearing from the mining industry. I mean, I've actually ridden an ore boat from Superior, Wisconsin to Indiana Harbor through Lake Superior and all the way down through Lake Michigan. And once you've done that, you have a different view of Lake Superior than you have from driving up Highway 61 on the North Shore. It is a major transportation corridor, and it is very interesting to see ships on all sides of you moving freight. And the port in Duluth is very, very important to this state, and it's very important to the Iron Range. And I guess, Madam Chair, before I feel comfortable to vote on it, I'd like to hear what the Iron Mining Association thinks, because they're the big gorilla in the port in Duluth. About somewhere between 55 and 60% of all the cargo that's ever gone out of the port in Duluth is iron ore.
All right, members, Senator Chaudhry, we have a time problem here. I intend to bring up Senator Vickerman's bill and pass it out today, the biodiesel bill. And it shouldn't be very long, and we've spent weeks working on some language, and it's been agreed to today, and I want to get that bill passed and sent out in respect for all the people who have worked so hard to get that figured out. So I don't know if we have – I mean, we could take brief testimony, but I have a feeling it's not going to be brief, that this is going to take a little more time. And I don't know if we have more amendments that are going to be offered or if this is the last one. If I'm assuming there's probably more, then we're going to have to lay this bill over and come back on another day, which, you know – it's not the end of the world. This is a long bill. It has a lot of things in it. And so I kind of thought that might happen anyway. It's just, I know you want to get on your way, Senator Chaudhry, and get this bill moving. So I think what we should do is just lay this bill over for now and come back. And as soon as we can schedule the committee, we will come back and finish Senator Chaudhry's bill. Maybe in that period of time, there'd be a chance for the parties to talk to each other, and then we can bring this back and have that brief testimony and make sure that we hear from the different sides briefly, because this is some new language. I think that would be only fair. But we just really don't have time to do that right now. So, members, for your information, okay, Senate File 3385 will be laid on the table, and we'll return to it as soon as we can reschedule another hearing, which will be either Thursday or Tuesday, I'm guessing, depending on our session schedule on Thursday. We have session at 11 on – so it's possible we could meet in the afternoon on Thursday if session is brief. Otherwise, it'll probably have to be next Tuesday. Senator Frederickson?
Madam Chair, we're not going to take up Senate File 3243 either then.
Which one is that?
Senator Mary Olson.
Yeah, Senator Mary Olson's bill was – we had put this on the agenda as something to be discussed as a possible amendment to Senator Chaudhry's bill. Okay. So I apologize for Senator Olson, who's been waiting, but I think she'll have to come back and we'll discuss the Leech Lake issue when we bring Senator Chaudhry's bill back. So let's take up the biodiesel bill, which is Senate File 2724. Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate File 2724 is a bill that moves Minnesota forward in our biofuels development. The bill represents the recommendations of the Biodiesel Task Force. The bill provides for the next step in the development of biofuels to a graduated increase in the biodiesel blend, going from our current biodiesel blend of 2% up to 5% on May 2009, a 10% blend on May 2012, and a 20% blend in 2015. Passage of this bill, members and Madam Chair, would be amount to a win-win scenario for Minnesota, because it helps farmers, helps our rural economy, while also helping our environment and reducing our dependence on foreign oil. Madam Chair, I have Mr. Bull here, Mike Bull, who's going to walk through the bill faster, easier than I could. Members, remember, they spent a lot of time and met a lot of meetings trying to get to this final amendment. Would you like me to offer the 810 before he explains it, sir? I just...
Well, I think, Senator Vickerman, I think we should have some explanation of it, because it's not the first committee. And so let's talk about the 810 amendment, and then we can adopt that and move on the bill. Mr. Bull, you want to say something? Welcome.
Madam Chair, I'm Mike Bull. I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Energy Security at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And I'm just going to walk briefly through the components of the amendment. We, as you mentioned, we have been working with a number of parties. The biodiesel bill itself has been worked on with stakeholders, you know, the Truckers Association, petroleum marketers, the ag guys, the and now the environmental community. We're pulling all the pieces together, and I think we've the and I want to thank Senator Vickerman for his leadership, not only on this issue in particular, but ag issues generally. And I think he's done an amazing job with this bill as well. So the various piece parts are, Madam Chair, the of the A-10 amendment. One is the on lines 1-3 to 1-5 would exclude the use of foreign palm oil, which has been a concern for, you know, clearing rainforests and such in order to grow palm and make fuel out of it, and the resulting greenhouse gas emissions and other issues that are result from that. Lines 1-6 and 1-7 would require, again, that the feedstock used for our biodiesel should come from within the United States and Canada and increase the local production capacity required for our biodiesel production from 50% under the bill to 75% under the bill. Lines 111 to 117 are a recognition that over time we want to start moving and using other feedstocks other than row crops to meet our biodiesel mandate. So including algae cultivated for biofuels production, waste oils, and tallow. And so the idea would be create a small carve-out for those non-traditional feedstocks if it's deemed by the folks that that's an economic use of for those fuels. Lines 118 to 120, we want to make sure there's an annual reporting in the bill on a number of issues, and one of the things that we'll adding to that annual reporting is the impacts of the mandate on the development of production capacity in the state and the use of feedstock grown in the state. In order to, we want to keep track of the local impacts, local economic impacts, that is a driver for the bill. Lines 122 to 135, Madam Chair, there are a number of bio-based diesel alternatives, what we think of as renewable diesel, on the horizon that we want to keep track of and make sure we don't lose. That may provide the same level of benefits, local economic benefits, environmental benefits, consumer benefits, as biodiesel does. And so that section 5 would require us to come back with a study before the biodiesel increment would increase to B10 in 2011. Page 2 of the A10 amendment, Madam Chair, is a new Section 6, lines 2-1 to 2-30. One of the recommendations of the Next Gen Energy Board, which you are hold a leadership position on, and Senator Vickerman sits on as well, is how do we build on the benefits of our current low-carbon fuels, our ethanol fuels, and our biodiesel blends, and move beyond those and take a broader look at reducing the carbon in our fuels generally and building on those successes that we currently have. And what are the consumer impacts of doing that? So this would require implement a Next Generation Energy Board recommendation for a low-carbon fuel standard study. Madam Chair, this next section, 231 through the rest of the bill, refers back to the Section 5 in the current bill of first engrossment of Senate File 2724. If you'll see on lines 4.24 and 4.25, there's a provision made there for the use of some currently appropriated dollars to use those dollars for cold weather blending infrastructure grants. There are pockets of the state that aren't currently served by the best infrastructure available for blending biodiesel with petroleum diesel for cold weather use. And so, and one of the key areas that the biodiesel task force was concerned about is that Marshall area and in through the southwest. We want to make sure that the entire state is able to have well-blended fuels and good quality fuels for use year-round. And so the concern that had been raised was we were repurposing or looking to repurpose dollars that were made available to the department for renewable energy research and use those dollars for these biodiesel blending infrastructure grants. And I think there's a general concern about that. And so the amendment would, as I understand it, would make some money, some general fund money that was available to the Next Generation Energy Board and make that money available for this purpose rather than those research dollars.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Bull. Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, and then it also does eliminate the $500,000 for the algae to biofuels research. I wanted to make sure the members were aware of that.
Talk about that.
And then also, well, Madam Chair, then there should be a technical amendment on 2.27 after board. Insert
2.27 of the amendment?
Of the amendment. 2.27 of the amendment. After board, insert, comma, the biodiesel board, comma, and then delete 2. And so it'll read recommendations to the Next Generation Energy Board, the Biodiesel Board, and the chairs and ranking minority members. I think that would.
Okay. Senator Vickerman can incorporate that technical change into the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to incorporate into the A10.
Great. Why is the algae taken out? I wasn't aware that anybody wanted to take that out. Was that a mistake? The algae research, the.
Madam Chair, I'm not exactly sure why.
I think maybe that was just maybe occurred in the drafting by accident, is my guess. Because I never had any, maybe just a lack of communication among everyone. And because we were trying to change it, as you said, to the Next Gen Energy Board grants. And I think we had that conversation. I think that's a very appropriate use of dollars for the blending issue. But I think the RDF money could be used for the algae to biofuels research. I think that was appropriate. And so I'd actually like to see both of those still in the bill. I think they're both really good projects that are worthy of funding. They just needed to be split apart into different state agencies. So maybe we could make that correction. Okay. I don't know if that will take language or not. Yeah, Mr. Knopf.
Madam Chair, did you want the money out of the Next Gen Energy funding?
Well, the way the bill, Mr. Chair, I always do this. Mr. Knopf, I've been just trained after so many years to start every sentence by saying Mr. Chair or Madam Chair, so you know how that works. Mr. Knopf, the way that it's written in the original bill, it comes out of the Next Gen Energy Grants to Commerce, I believe.
Right.
And so I think the algae to biofuels research should stay the way it was originally drafted from those grants to Commerce last year. And the blending facility infrastructure grant should come from the Next Gen Energy grants that went to the Department of Agriculture. And I see everyone nodding. That was my understanding, and I think everybody's agreeing. That was what we had intended, and there was probably just this all I know was drafted just in the last hour. So that's perfectly understandable. So as long as everyone's in agreement, that would be great to keep that.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Bull?
I think maybe I didn't mention, but I should mention that this language that you see in the A10 amendment was worked out this morning in a room full of stakeholders that included the truckers, the Minnesota Farm Bureau, the Minnesota Farm Union, Flint Hills, ourselves, and a number of environmental groups. So this comes to you with some level of agreement.
And, Mr. Bull, I was going to just say that myself, that I really want to thank everybody and thank Senator Vickerman especially for your leadership on helping us to all get together and work out these issues in this bill. It makes me extremely comfortable and supportive of this bill, and so I really appreciate the work that's gone into this and all the different people who spent a lot of hours and a lot of meetings trying to put together the language that we see in this amendment. And I think it helps us move forward and keeps, you know, the environmentalists and the farmers moving in the same direction towards a future that includes biofuels in a really positive way for Minnesota. So I'm very appreciative of the work that went into this. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to suggest a couple other changes in the language. And I'll tell what they are. Yeah. Senator Bickerman is in agreement with them. He can just incorporate them in. On the A-10 amendment, page 2, line 5, I delete nation leading because we're writing law, not a press release or a news release. Page 2, line 5, delete nation leading.
Oh, that's our favorite new expression, Senator Fredrickson.
And then on line 8, after measures, insert the progress in reducing and delete progress that you see later in that sentence.
So deletes measures and inserts progress?
No, after measures.
Oh, okay, measures.
That measures the progress in reducing greenhouse gas emissions on a full life cycle basis is how it read. I'll delete progress.
Okay, I think those are good suggestions, Senator Fredrickson. Any comment, any objection to those changes? All right, does everyone, do you have the words?
Yes.
A funding discussion.
Well, no, that on Senator Fredrickson's motion to make those oral changes on page 2 of the A-10 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no, motion prevails. On the funding, I think we just need to be clear about what we intend, and I think that's just a technical matter that the staff can fix for us. And I can state it again. That would be helpful.
Madam Chair, if you want me to...
You want to...
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Knopf.
I think what you want to do is basically you're going to adopt 2.31 through 2.35 as it applies to the section that's in there now, and then a new section that would be the existing section with some word changes. So basically, you've got two $500,000 allotments, basically, because these monies are already appropriated. So you'll have the $500,000 from the next gen board that was general fund for the one program, and then for the algae, you're going to have a $500,000 from the renewable development fund. And I think, Madam Chair, I'll just say that I think for the sake of the staff or the committee staff, I can just put together a new A11 amendment that incorporates everything in and pass it, including all of the amendments. And then but you can adopt it, the A10 with those amendments. And then just for the staff purpose, I'll pass that on, make it easier for the committee.
So that'll just be part of the record of this just committee action.
Chair, yes.
Okay. Sounds good. Senator Parisot.
Madam Chair, just a question. On line 2.31, we have of capitalized, but it says before of, you put the $500,000 in. So I'm assuming that after $500,000 goes in, it should be a small O in of, wouldn't it?
Madam Chair, that's automatic.
I'm just trying to be Senator Higgins here for
Thank
a change.
You. Thank you for being our grammar police.
It's automatic.
It would probably come out that way anyway if you didn't think about it. You just put a small O and never think about it.
They've agreed?
Well.
Well.
We should move that amendment, though.
Yes. All right. I think we have an understanding of the fiscal changes that we're incorporating into Senator Vickerman's A-10 amendment. So on the A-10 amendment, if there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Okay. Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Vickerman, I guess I just want to understand the bill. As I read the bill, what we're doing is we're mandating the purchase of biodiesel, and I can understand that would be of benefit to people in agriculture that produce products that biodiesel is made from, and it would be an advantage to people that market and sell biodiesel. But I'm trying to understand, what is the public benefit that this mandate is designed to serve? Why should we do this? I do understand that if you create a mandate saying you have to buy this product, the people that produce and sell that product benefit. But how does the rest of the public benefit from the mandate?
Madam Chair, Senator Hunt, I think the answer is multiple. There are multiple public benefits, we think, to this for this bill, and increasing the biodiesel blending requirement over time. There are the two that you mentioned, the rural economic development benefits and the farmer benefits, but there are also the environmental benefits, the reduction in the types of pollutants that are currently that this would displace through the use of through displacing petroleum diesel. There are the greenhouse gas reduction benefits that we think will follow on with this. There's the benefit of increasing the supply of diesel fuel and diesel alternatives. As you probably well know, that the market, that the petroleum diesel market, is just very, very tight as well. And so there are fluctuations and volatility in prices. It's very susceptible to that. And to the extent that we put additional petroleum or diesel alternatives into the market, that's helpful as well. And these are some of the reasons why the petroleum marketers are supportive of the proposal, the truckers are supportive of the proposal. In addition to the environmental community and farms community.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Bull, I understand the benefit. I don't think it's a public benefit to say tax dollars will be, or people's personal dollars will be directed to benefit a small group of people any more than it's appropriate to build stadiums for professional ball teams. To me, it's the same kind of idea. But I think the argument that you make about the benefits are very similar to the arguments that were made for ethanol when we adopted the mandates for ethanol. And we have seen that since that time that those benefits really aren't there. There's nothing in the bill that suggests that this is going to reduce the cost of fuel to anybody, or that it would actually increase the supply. I think you make a good point that there is a problem in supply, but I think that's more related to the lack of refining capacity and the lack of a willingness on the part of, I guess, people nationally to find and drill for more petroleum, which, when we certainly have more reserves today than we've had in any time in human history. So, well, I guess what I'm concerned about is, it seems to me that this bill is very similar to the ethanol mandate, in that what we're going to do is direct the public to spend money to benefit certain segments of the economy, when we don't do that for most other business segments. And I think that is problematic, and I don't think that's a fair use of law to compel people to buy a product because some other people think it's a good idea, any more than it would be to create a law to direct people to buy a particular clothing product or another retail product or anything else. And so I guess, Madam Chair and Senator Vickerman, and with all respect, I don't believe that the public is served by this kind of a mandate, and I'm going to have to oppose it.
Mr. Knopf, do you have another technical change to make?
Madam Chair, yes. Apparently, there was some concern over the 50 to the 75 on line 1.7 of the amendment, going from 50 to 75 on the overall. And apparently, what I'm hearing now is that the parties involved in this were hoping to have it be just the feedstock portion. And I think what if the committee wants to do this, what I would suggest is on 1.6, after feedstock, insert with at least 75%. That is, and we'll have to see how this works out when it's all engrossed. And then on line 1.7. Delete everything after the quotes after Canada. So it would read page 2, line 20, after state, insert from feedstock with at least 75% that is produced in the United States and Canada.
Okay, so the feedstock soybeans or whatever would come from the United States or Canada, from
Madam Chair, at least 75%
farmers here. And that's the idea that we wanted to make sure was expressed. Okay, so that reflects everybody's agreement. Is that? I see nods. Okay. All right, Senator Vickerman, did we adopt the A-10 yet? No? Okay. Senator Vickerman, would you like to incorporate that change as well into the A-10 amendment?
Madam Chair, yes. Madam Chair, members, now you know why we spent days and hours on I think we're there now.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's good work, so I really appreciate it. All right, I think we're ready to vote on the A-10 amendment. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Chair, should that motion be
Yeah. Would you like to move the bill as amended to finance? Senator Vickerman moves that Senate File 2724 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion
no.
prevails. Thank you very much, and members, will let you know as soon as possible when we schedule our next meeting and bring back the rest of Senator Chaudhry's bill.
Not today.
Not today?
I mean, it isn't today.
It's not today, for sure. I promise you it's not today. I won't be back.
This week?
Hopefully this week if we have time, but it really, I don't know. We'll have to check on the session schedule. The meeting's adjourned. Try to do it at our regular committee time.